World Service.
Earth has some bright ideas. Here's Tom Heap.
This is our new house. We bought it and moved in just before Christmas. It's a four-bedroom, freestanding cottage in a village that's kind of spread over a hillside in Warwickshire. I thought the purchase price was a good deal, but keeping it warm and lit, well, that has cost me a fortune. The money is just flying out of my wallet. And as a family, my wife Tam and three children, we're just doing too much to heat the planet. Around one-third of the country's global warming carbon dioxide comes from homes just like ours. I want to reduce my little bit of CO2, and you maybe could pick up some tips too. And here is our A-team coming equipped and fully loaded to save the world one house at a time.
Hi, I'm Tom.
Hello, Tom.
By the sign on your thing saying Air Leakage Testing Limited.
Absolutely.
You must be the man who's going to come and inflate my house. Hello.
Hello.
This is Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Could you just pass me that torch, please?
Number one, energy-saving guru Dominic Gooding of Creative Environmental Networks and his man with the gadgets and the know-how, Phil McGrory. Then unpacking the toys from his truck, Keith Bartlett, a.k.a. the man with the fan. They're here on a mission to discover how much energy we're losing, and with this bunch, waste CO2 doesn't stand a chance.
This is a boroscope, and what I've done is I've drilled a hole in the ceiling, and now I can see straight in there, and by the looks of it, there is insulation.
Any idea how old that is? I haven't seen anything like that for a very long time.
Okay, Dominic, well, this is Laburnum Cottage. We moved in here a couple of months ago, and I've already been horrified by some of the heating bills I'm getting back, which is just absurd. I'm rather hoping you're going to sort of lay hands on it and sort me out, so I don't know what you want to start by looking at.
Hi, Tom. Yes, it would be great just to have a look around the outside of the house. Always a good idea to look at the walls, look at the roof, look at the boiler, look at the system, just see how it all hangs together.
You mentioned the boiler, which for my mind is rather the root of all evil, and that's in here, outside in a shed. Now, come and have a look. First impressions?
That's a very old boiler.
You can see we've got clothes hanging up in here, and the reason
it's
for that...
It's lovely and warm in here, isn't it?
Yes.
Unfortunately, it's not inside your house. I don't know how old that is, but I've never seen anything quite like it before.
We did get a guy just to restart it once. And he said he reckoned it was about 30 years old.
Yeah.
I said, should we get a new one? He said, oh, well, it's still working okay, but I guess he wasn't that concerned about efficiency.
Certainly not. I would certainly consider changing that. Absolutely no question.
It's got this big chimney that's just taking it all out.
Half of the money that you're spending on oil is going straight up that big tube, the flue, coming out of the top. Crazy.
I'm just measuring the outside of the house just to get the floor area of the house and actual height of the gables and everything, just to see where the heat loss is coming from and where it's going to. So, just back in a minute when I climb over this guy's fence.
So, windows here, I mean, I don't know whether you want to cast an expert eye on those. There's a French door which is rotting away at the bottom.
You've got your double glazing, which is great, but if you can see light around the edge of it, and I can see a hole in the bottom of your door. Tom, I think you need to be considering draft-proofing there.
I think that little bit of carpet resting there is not
the
adequate.
The carpet's helping, but it's not really doing the job for you properly.
Here's one of the fires.
Yeah. Open fireplace.
There's two. This is a coal fire. We've used this, I think, once.
Yeah. Do you ever shut off the chimney when you're not using it?
Nope.
That might be something to consider, because you are drawing air out. You don't want to shut it off completely. But if you're actually sucking air out from inside the house, you're taking some of that heat out with you.
How do you shut off a chimney?
You sometimes have restrictor plates, if we have a look up here, that you might actually find there is one. Don't often go around putting my hand up chimneys, but... No, there isn't. In fact, if you put your hand there, you can feel the air going out of the chimney. Put your hand there and you'll feel it's cold.
Oh, yeah. So that's some of my money, heating
money. That's your
money.
Heat going up the
there.
Chimney.
Right, money now, in the bank.
One of the things you'd want to be considering, I'd have thought, is putting in a nice contained stove in there.
Yeah.
One of those with sort of the big glass door, so you can still see the fire, but you can actually start extracting more of the heat out. I mean, you're throwing an awful lot of the heat that you put into the fireplace straight up the chimney. I think it's 60% going straight out.
First thing I can see there is that your loft hatch isn't insulated.
And there's no draft.
On the wrist again.
There's no draft proofing on that loft hatch. I don't know whose bedroom it is, but it might get a bit drafty.
Yeah, that's Dougal, my eldest son. He'll
get cold. OK, you've got mineral wool up here. Not very much. It's just up to the top of your rafters. So maybe you've got 2 inches, 50 mil. Certainly not enough.
Mineral wool, is that what we're sort of understand as that fiberglass wool?
That's right. I mean, a lot of people think they've got loft insulation, and they're thinking back to the 70s when 50 mil was sort of the recommended amount. But as we've gone on, over time, the recommended amount of loft insulation has gone up. You really do want to consider topping this loft up.
And you'll be able to see that thickness on your bill, will you?
You'll be able to see it, and you'll be able to feel it in this room almost immediately.
Really?
I did it in my house about 6 months ago. It went from no loft insulation, which I probably shouldn't really admit to 200 mil, and the difference was felt immediately. I was actually feeling quite guilty about the kids up there sleeping in a cold room. I put the loft insulation in, and I couldn't believe the difference it made.
I'm embarrassed to say I don't even quite know where my electric meter is. I think it's outside in that boiler room.
That's an interesting point. You pay by direct debit?
Yep.
You don't actually think about how much energy you consume. It's all taken care of for you. It leaves your bank account. There's no immediate concern. If your bills go up or you use more this quarter than you did last quarter, you don't actually know. It's part of the direct debit thing with the utility bills. If you actually knew how much you were using and you could see the difference when it's cold, I think you'd probably take it more seriously.
So you're saying I should have my meter on a wall with nice big figures.
A nice big flashing red light.
Like an electric
Tom, turn me down.
Okay, it's bad, but how bad? Keith has gear that delivers the figures, and he's replacing my front door with a Hollywood wind machine and has now taped up all the windows.
Well, what we're going to do now is start the fan up. We're going to increase the pressure within the building so that it's 50 pascals above atmospheric pressure outside.
Am I actually going to be able to feel it, notice it at all?
Not really.
I guess it's going to be a howling gale coming through that door, is there?
There'll be a lot of noise from the fan and quite a draft. But other than that, if you were anywhere else in the house, you wouldn't notice the pressure difference at all.
It'll give you a headache, really.
No, it won't burst your eyeballs or pop your ears or anything like that. You wouldn't even notice. You can see the room pressure gauge beginning to creep as we're building pressure in the...
I can feel a stiff breeze beginning to blow up my forehead.
You see it creeping up now?
Yeah.
Keith knows how much air he's pumping into my house and what the pressure should be if there were no leaks at all. The actual figure, compared with the atmospheric pressure outside, tells him that my home is losing 15 cubic metres of air per hour for every square metre of outside wall and roof. That is well below current building standards. But where is that heat and air escaping? Bring on the smoke machine.
This is amazing. It's filling the house. It's extraordinary to think that this is something that's helping the house. It's actually quite scary. I've already... can barely see Keith, who's 6 foot away from me.
It's a rectangular thing about the size of a couple of shoeboxes, and it's just blasting out a stream of smoke from a little hole.
It's filling that. I guess this must be like when you've got a fire in the house. That is really quite scary.
You wouldn't be able to breathe.
Yeah.
In a real fire, you'd be choking as well. Your eyes would be streaming.
So Keith, this is a surreal view of the inside of the house, but what are we actually doing it for?
We're doing it to ascertain where all the little leaks and cracks and gaps are, which basically aren't visible to the naked eye. But if we were on the outside of the building, because we're pressurising it at the moment, we should be seeing it beginning to squeeze out of all the gaps.
Think we've got enough smoke to see that already? Is it worth going out
to
have a look?
I think it'd be
worth... Shall I go and do that?
Yep, go and have a look.
Okay. I'm going into the kitchen, but I wouldn't know it. Mine out of the furniture. I've got this incredibly powerful torch with me, but it's doing absolutely nothing. Oh, that really is quite spooky. Well then. Okay. Oof, we're outside now. Right, let's look for leaks.
The boiler room is where it's coming out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it's coming out here. It appears to be cutting out the soffits. Roof a lot.
Well, it will do because the soffits are not insulated, so you've got an airflow over your house.
My little brother's room, yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, round the front, it's actually...
What's it like at the front, yeah?
It's worse at the front.
Is it?
But you see how effective it is actually showing up what we're talking about.
I suppose we should be sensible and go and write down where these things are, should we?
Because you see, you'd have an awful job trying to persuade a builder that there were that many gaps in something that he'd just built. But as soon as you do this, it's visual proof of what we keep saying to people, and they don't believe us. Effectively, what you're seeing is heat. All that smoke is your heat that you've paid for.
Billowing into the evening air.
Yeah, going nowhere.
You're listening to Costing the Earth on Radio 4, and this week we're trying to advise on how to make your home more environmentally friendly and save your heating bills. Not a new home, but an old house that you bought and want to improve, and we're basing it on my own. And a couple of weeks ago I had some energy efficiency experts come round my place, and basically, well, after they'd got their head out of their hands, they told me all the things I needed to do to make my home more energy efficient, and I've done quite a few of them. So just starting here in the sitting room, this door and door frame were rotten. We've replaced them, and we're in the process of sealing up the gaps here. Currently we've got some newspaper up there, that won't stay there forever. They also told me my radiators, particularly the ones on the outside walls of the house, should have a reflector behind them so the heat is reflected into the room. Here's something I haven't done yet. The actual letterbox, they said, was a place where a lot of drafts come in. Chimneys, while I'm not using them, a hell of a lot of draft disappears up them. Your hot air disappears up and cold air can drop down. So they recommended blocking them off. I found something called a chimney balloon, which is like a plastic pillow. You inflate it, stuff it up your chimney. We've also been going around the doors with draft excluders and things like that, keeping the drafts out of there. Bit of mastic work around some of the frames. All that came to less than £100, and in this chilly spring, I'll tell you, that's pretty good value for money. Next comes the loft. I've got to insulate that, and the power company has an offer on right now to do it for £50. Wherever you live, your gas or electricity company should offer a similar kind of service. The price may vary quite a bit, but if you're on a low income, it could actually be free. Anyway, I think that's now the cheap and easy stuff largely done, and I'm up for the next stage, finding greener ways of actually making energy. And to do that, I've come in here. This giant space is this year's EcoBuild exhibition at Earl's Court, where some top dogs are holding forth.
Thank you very much, Nick. I'm going to, in the next 15 minutes, rather rush through the big picture and come back to the role of...
That's David King talking. He's the government's chief scientific advisor, obviously very interested in environmentally friendly building. Let's see if we can catch a word with him afterwards.
Around the planet is just its consistency.
The programme is about the fact that I've bought an old house and... Looking for the excitement of trying to find ways of making it more energy efficient, right, saving energy, and also generating it in a greener way. Because it seems to me there's a real opportunity there. Yeah. A lot of the things we see are about new builds, are about, you know, grand designs, but actually most of us are living in old properties, and if we want to make an impact, we need to convert the housing stock we've got and get excited in that. Well, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I'm in the same situation. Uh-huh. I've got an old house and I'm trying to make it more energy efficient. So looking at all of the possibilities for improving, the big win, of course, is on your gas heater or your oil heater or whatever is producing the heating. Look at how you use them as much as anything else. So what temperature you run your house at, if you reduce that temperature by 1 degree centigrade, just setting that thermostat a little bit lower and perhaps wearing a jumper indoors,
a few more jerseys.
Yes,
bring back the vest,
you would save 10% on your heating bill. And that may not sound an awful lot, but if we all did that, it would be a massive change. So there are big things to be done. Switching lights off every time you leave a room, I was brought up doing that because when I was brought up, energy was expensive and we all sort of cared for it. We've lost that now.
Is energy too cheap?
Well, energy has become far too cheap given the fact that we're destroying our environment with the carbon dioxide. In other words, we haven't been looking at the cost in total of what we're doing to our environment.
So
to be honest with you, when you see, you know, the price of gas and oil going up and everyone goes, oh, it's a terrible thing, what do you think?
You have to take on board the worries of relative price increases against our competitors. In other words, we still do have what we might call smokestack industries using a lot of energy.
But I mean, in terms of individuals, in terms of our own domestic consumption, that's what makes us change, isn't it, if the price goes up?
It's what makes us change, and we have to make sure that people who can't afford the heating are covered.
But
you're quite right. Energy price rises will give rise to efficiency gains. We'll all become more aware of it as it becomes more expensive.
A couple of things about whether, firstly, technology and government can help in that behavioural change. Let's look at technology first. Should our electricity meter, rather than being an impossible-to-read thing under the stairs, should it be there next to the front door with big figures like a petrol pump so you can see what it says?
And with that wheel running around so that everyone in the house can see how fast it's turning. Yes, we need technology. Yes, we need the fiscal drivers, the economic processes that will get us to behave in the right way. But in the end, it's a culture change.
Let's look at something where government really can make a difference, and some people are concerned: building regulations on new homes. Could they not be tighter to encourage greater energy efficiency? Because that's when it's really easy to make the difference.
I would like to see building regulations on new homes move to better standards as quickly as possible. But let's not forget, 99% of our housing is old buildings, and so looking at improving old buildings as well. Every time an old building is done up, it should follow a regulatory system which leads to energy efficiency gains. We all tend to, when we're buying a house, don't we? We look at the price, the actual capital cost of the house. We never ask questions about the running cost of the house.
Which is interesting, because if you were buying a car,
yes,
you don't just look at the price of it, you look at the running cost per year.
That's right.
A very, very good point.
Yes, we look at miles per gallon will you get out of that car. Again, culturally, we've just not got round to it, but it's one of those changes we must make.
Nestling just round the corner in an exhibition space complete with cutaway models here of walls, floors and ceilings is the Energy Savings Trust, official government bankrolled experts on cutting your bills and your emissions. All their knowledge is for your benefit, and Kirk Archibald is busy ladling it out.
Tell you an interesting notion I was just talking about with Sir David King, the government's chief scientific advisor, was that with cars, we don't just look at the initial price, we look at the running costs. And that this idea ought to be in place for houses as well.
You know, our homes are bigger gas guzzlers than our cars, frankly. And as you add the two, it equates to nearly 80% of the energy needs of everyday people. An enormous problem that we have to kind of get across to people.
I gather there are new regulations about seller's packs on houses, right, and things like this. I mean, is this something you're pushing that should be included as a fundamental piece of information on a home?
Yes. The seller's pack is something that's being pushed through, particularly by us and a number of other organisations. It's being backed up by some European legislation known as the Energy Performance in Buildings Directive, which, when it comes into UK law, which is next June, I believe, there'll be a requirement on owners, tenants, developers of buildings, if you like, and that'll come right down to the householder eventually, it won't initially, to provide an energy certificate, sort of an MOT certificate, if you like, for your building, plus a list of measures that you could employ to move that building up a scale, if you like, on this certificate. Where you see things like on cold appliances at the moment, your washing machine comes with an A to G scale when you buy a new washing machine. We'll have the same for a house or a building. So every time we see a house bought or sold, there will be this requirement to produce this sort of house MOT certificate. And that will command a different price, of course, now. So if it's a G-rated house, you'll buy or say, well, you know, there's one A-rated down the road, I'm going to pay a bit less if I want this one, you know. Why should I expect to pay the same? Particularly in an environment where we've seen British Gas rise their prices by, 25% recently? That's the announcement. You know.
How much broader does your smile get every time you see energy prices go up?
Well, I shouldn't say it makes me happy, because I have to pay my energy costs as well. But in terms of helping us promote our message, it's one of the killer silver bullets, if you like. It really helps us focus the mind.
But even more powerful is that fear of Mr. Putin and his hand on the gas pipe. That really affects people as well, doesn't it? Gets through up here.
There are all sorts of ways of starting to mitigate that process. First one is to stop reducing our need for the stuff. So, you know, if we don't need as much, it's precisely, then we're less reliant on buying lots and lots in. The next stage would be to start producing your own locally, which is just around the corner now. You know, we're really starting to see some new technologies take off that allow you as a homeowner to generate your own heat and power.
These are what we call thermal solar heating devices. As you can see, it's like a vacuum tube. With a number of these, depending on how much water you actually need, you can actually take something like 70% of the total supply throughout the year. You don't need bright sunshine, all you need is daylight.
For an average family of four and their water heating, something that size would do it?
A typical four-bedroom house, a recent quote that we've done was like 20 tubes. It could range from £4,000 to £6,000.
What do you think?
I think they look good. I'm sold.
You're going to get maybe not even 70% efficiency out of a wood stove. Out of this, you'll get a 90% efficiency. It's a gasification boiler, so it runs at very high temperatures, and it burns off the products of combustion asue. So you're getting a secondary burn off the flue gases. It literally gasifies the timber.
And the key question, how much does it cost?
This appliance is around about £3,200. An accumulator tank to go on that is about £700. And then your control system to suit your central heating systems. Yeah?
Thank you very much.
That's right. The
east part of Tam, North Italy.
I don't know what you think, but I don't see the point of logs if you're not going to see them.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's no justification. You just look at the most efficient way of heating your house if you're going to have one of those, which might be, I don't know, you might still be using gas or oil or something.
A stand doing some kind of windmill here, a very elegant, it's a bit like the part of the classic DNA double helix, but it's a sort of triple helix, a section of it.
Hello there, chaps.
You've got these very elegant wind turbines.
Is it fabulous?
I suppose the blindingly obvious question is, why have you gone for this, as I say, this sort of helical, vertical helix design, rather than a conventional...
With a helix, they overlap, and so you get a continuous torque on it, which is quieter and produces electricity at much lower wind speeds than otherwise. So in urban environments, you get low wind speeds, the wind buffets around other buildings, comes from all directions, and this can produce electricity in those environments.
Lots of the folks at EcoBuild seem to think that I should check out wind power, and as I live on a hillside, that could be worthwhile. One of the leaders in this area is the company Windsave, and their man, Stephen Gilbert, came to my house to see if it was a good spot for it. My wife, Tam, was there to meet him.
Well, yes, I think this property is a prime site on a lovely hillside location. There'll be plenty of wind here to take maximum advantage of it and probably generate higher than average power here. That's the system there. Not much bigger than a satellite dish. Very straightforward. A pole there mounting in a few brackets.
Yes.
A cable then runs down into a box which will be inside your property. So the cable into the box, that then smooths out the rough energy generated from the wind,
right,
and feeds it in to your property through a 13 amp socket at 230 volts 50 hertz. And that then reduces what you draw through your meter and in turn reduces your bill.
So does it only work when the wind's blowing?
Yes.
And it doesn't store it?
No, it doesn't. It does not store it. The system is not designed to store the electricity. It's only rated at 1 kilowatt,
mm-hmm,
and therefore will only reach that at about a 30 mile an hour wind.
Right.
So the chances of it generating at that for a continual period is unlikely. I'm not saying it won't happen, but predominantly you'll find that different appliances that are on in the house, whether it be your fridge, your freezer, time clocks, TV left in standby, that's all drawing power.
Yeah.
And we aim to cover that, as it's known, a base load over the year, and therefore reduce your bill accordingly.
Are there any planning issues with putting these up?
At the moment, there are some planning issues. However, as long as the unit is situated at least 2 metres from the boundary of your property and not more than 2 metres above the highest point in your property, there are not normally any restrictions there on planning. There's also a microgeneration strategy bill going through Parliament at the moment to extend that and open it up to more people. The exact detail of that is not yet known, but it should be available later in the year. The situation here, of course, the house is well away from the boundary of your property, so I would not see any requirement for planning in this situation.
No more ugly than TV aerials or satellite dishes.
No, that's right. They're not dissimilar in style to them, but the key thing is that you're making a statement, as it were, that you're doing something for the environment.
Yeah.
You're not just being egotistical and saying, well, look at me, I can get 100 TV channels.
How much do these things cost? I mean, I've an idea that they're very expensive, is that right?
Well, some systems are expensive, but our system has been designed so that it has mass market potential. An installed cost, a standard installation, is £1,500. And of that £1,500, you'll be able to claim a grant from the government of approximately £500. And therefore, basically, it's only £1,000 to yourself as a householder.
But what would be the payback time? That's what people seem to talk about.
Of course, that's paramount. On average, the electricity generated at current prices will produce a payback of around 5 years. Right. But I must admit, in this site here, I think you'll get a higher than average return for your money. So obviously that time period would be cut back.
I quite like the sound of that. Wind seems pretty good for some electricity. But what about my heat? The solar option really looks out of my price range. I suppose the alternative is what some call naturally stored solar energy. Others just know it as wood.
But if you're going to go with wood, it takes a lot of work. I've just been chainsawing up some wood. That doesn't take too long. And then you've got to split it to get it into your fire, which is what I'm having a go at now. That's satisfying. This is some cherry. This was actually a dead tree from the edge of the garden. So I think it's environmentally friendly because it's in effect, wood is converted solar energy. It's been taken in by a tree as it grows, locked up carbon inside it through photosynthesis. And I'm gonna let it out again when it burns, but as the tree grows again, it'll absorb the carbon dioxide once more.
All these logs will go into a stove rather than open fire, and the next debate is whether that should just heat the space around it, like a big glowing block if you like, or whether it should heat water for central heating. Well, to find out what works for us, you can wait 9 months for the follow-up programme and see if the bills have shrunk and the green halo is shining or somewhat tarnished, or check out the website, bbc.co.uk/radio4, and follow the progress. Once there, you'll also find useful links to advice and expertise, and also my top 10 energy-saving hints. Do them this summer, and be snug, and maybe even a little smug, by the winter.
Costing the Earth was presented by Tom Heap. The producer was Alistair Cross. Next week, Miriam O'Reilly will be travelling to China to the site of the world's first eco-city. That's at the same time, 9 o'clock.
bbc.co.uk